I don't know. We have to consult the Star Wars universe.
Yeah. I'm not sure the Star Wars universe even wants to hear from me.
Well, I'll tell you. There are some amazing Star Wars fans out there.
Oh, yeah. There's so many Star Wars fans that are bigger fans than I am. Even though I grew up watching, a bad VHS tape off of TV with commercials, and actor interview flying triangles in between commercials and content of a broadcast of episode 4 the first one, the 1977 film, and this was the old versions of those things, and I don't know, there's all that endless geek controversy about the changes in Star Wars and stuff, but those battles have all really been joined already.
Yeah, I'm thinking we should go and look through VHS tapes at your house.
Oh, you my parents' house?
Yeah, and if there's any good ones, we should send them to Everything is Terrible.
Yeah, I think you're right. There's probably some really good material there. And then my parents have all these home movies, too. I don't know where the old VHS ones are because, I guess, right at the beginning of my long-running interest in video equipment, my dad, when I was a kid, had one of those VHS camcorders. You put a full VHS tape in. But it was cool because you could just get any VHS tape and throw it in the thing. And then I remember my grandma got a Hi-8 one, and that was like when you started getting the smaller cartridges or whatever. And my dad, then when he upgraded his camera, he got that one of those the next generation, whatever, of tape, but it was still this analog tape. And so of the bulk of the videos that my dad has shot are on those old tape formats of one sort or another. And I guess it's one of those things that might be interesting to digitize someday, but it would probably be me or someone that would digitize them, because I don't know. I don't think my dad would be up for doing that, but he's not really into I don't know if he lugs a camera around much these days. He seems to have enough camera functionality on his iPhone.
Does he take a lot of videos?
He used to take a lot of family videos when the kids were young. So maybe maybe some years down the road, we can pull those out or something like that. He would take videos, of course, of first communions and family parties, Christmas. He had a long run of Christmas videos. I had a video project with the Boy Scouts or whatever that, and he would, he worked on, when he really put his mind to it, it was very impressive. We were editing video, and that really made an impression on me. We would just take video and then have them on tapes, maybe watch them later. I got into, using the video camera, because that one was cool. You could just pop the tape right in the player after, you see what you made. But, in fact, some of the, horseplay with the video cameras led to the infamous and still unfinished videos that Courtney and Katie, and other people in the family talk about that we worked on. my dad was taking a VCR, a regular VCR, and then copying stuff over with a VHS tape. And we were editing the videos, and that was impressive. Being able to actually edit video, put the part that you shot, that you wanted in this part of the sequence, to just put the videos in the sequence you wanted, even with the, the slowness and the copying limitations, the analog, magnetic tape, would lead to lower quality with each copy and stuff. It was still really cool, And now, I mean, it gives me an appreciation of being able to use Final Cut Pro and Premiere to edit videos, too. I told you about my Scriber Transcide project. If you want to support this podcast and our music, you can go to the Google Play Store now, and you can buy any of the four Screenbird tracks that have been released so far for 99 cents each. So go to the djmcloud.com site, and there'll be a link there to the Google Play Store. Check the show notes for Podcast 32. In the background, you hear Riding at Night, one of the new Screenbird tracks from the Riding at Night EP. You can see the Screenbird website at screenbird.djmcloud.com. Well, it's certainly tradition on the djmcloud.com podcast to talk about iOS apps. And so here in episode number 32... we've got a couple new ones to talk about, and the first one I wanted to mention was 645 Pro. This is a camera app, and of course we've seen numerous camera replacement apps, and I've often talked about my fondness for Pro Camera. But this is a worthwhile entrant. This 645 Pro. Right now, I think it's on for $3. I think that's pretty reasonable for what you get. This camera has a handful of different cool features. It has the optional grid overlays. It has day and night modes. It has real-time ISO data, and it's going to give you indicators that are pretty useful, and also some autofocus features. You're gonna get a camera app that does, I think, a pretty good job of simulating a high-end point-and-shoot in some ways. Have you tried that app at all?
You know, I've seen you show me the screen, which has buttons that look like a real camera. And I think that's a very interesting approach. And I would like to try it to see if there's some sort of natural familiarity with it.
I think that there's another premium feature that's worth talking about on 645 Pro, and that is that they have their version of RAW files that it creates optionally along with JPEGs. Now, what that means is that it takes as high information of an image as it can get from the OS, and it creates a TIFF file. So I think that this is pretty close to a lossless image. It's not exactly equivalent to raw data like a Nikon NEF or something like that. But I've tested it a little bit. Like, what you have to do is you have set it to save TIFFs, and then you go through iTunes to download the TIFFs. But because TIFFs don't work natively in iOS, but I found that the one that I tried, to be fair, I don't have a big sample size. It looked pretty good quality, and I've been pretty happy with the shots that I've gotten. Overall, you know, this is the same iOS app maker that made the 6x6 and 6x7 apps, which I've talked about before, and I think those are solid camera apps. They're very simple. They kind of took the iOS camera app down to the simple things that it needs. And now I kind of see this 645 Pro as an attempt to now build up what an iOS camera app is from those stripped down basics. I don't know if, you know, if that's the underlying vision. That's kind of where I see it going. And so I want to try to use the 645 Pro for a while, see if I get good TIFF images, if that really makes an impact, and see if I kind of go up the learning curve on using it and really use all the features. I think if I, you know, I'm going to have to try it for a while, but right now I'd recommend trying it if you're, you know, if you're an enthusiast about these kinds of, you know, iOS camera apps. I think that, you know, it's a very personal decision, what your, you know, camera app is. And what I'm often surprised by, though, is that despite the fact that a lot of people download different apps, people often seem to use the default iOS camera app. Do you notice that it's common that people use that? Like, now, what are your feelings about that?
I think a lot of people don't have a lot of instruction on how to use these other apps, you know, because they don't really come with a lot of information. And so there's a big sort of intimidation factor on people being able to go beyond the standard basic that comes with the phone. But I think conversations like this can maybe help them try it out and just have fun. And, you know, for just, you know, $4, $2, 99 cents, depending on the app, you can get a really fun camera experience. Whereas with, you know, a real, you know, physical camera, that's expensive to get all those lenses and do all that processing and spend all that time. So it really should open up people to the world of photography, and now the phones are making it just so easy to have such a rich, dynamic experience.
Yeah, whatever you're sharing the photos on, putting them right to Twitter or using Instagram or YFrog, or whether you're taking the photos for using later or, you know, for different purposes, the creation of the photo with your iPhone could really be enhanced with some of these apps, which I think are pretty simple, but you're right. A lot of them don't come with a lot of instruction, and that kind of goes to that issue that we've talked about recently about how a lot of interfaces now expect people to sort of figure something out or maybe look something up, but there's a lot of these hidden interfaces. And one thing I will say for the 645 Pro app is that it comes with a digital instruction manual. So it's, you know, I kind of just like glanced through it really quickly, but I think, you know, I might go back and refer to that again. So yeah, you know, I think that app could be worth checking out. Now here, there's an app that has gone free and changed its name. Another app that that I want to talk about, and that app is now called Pocket. It used to be called Read It Later. And in fact, I actually mentioned it briefly in episode number 29. I was talking about the Readability app, and I mentioned a couple of its competitors, and one of those competitors was Read It Later. It's now changed its name to Pocket. Its like website is getpocket.com, but here's the thing. I think that this is becoming the leading Reading Later app for a couple different reasons. The rebranding not being one of them.
Well, actually, depending on what they're doing, I at first I didn't like it. I mean, I still don't love the name Pocket. I think I would have liked a deeper, you know, word search on that. But the thing is, you know, Read It Later or Readability is referencing just reading, where the future of the web is going to be audio and video. And so there's this sort of idea of, you know, putting something in a pocket for later, but you're not sort of limiting the thinking around the app and what it can do to just reading. You know, so maybe they plan to have higher video and audio support as well. And then they have this pocketed sort of theme that makes people think of the reference of putting things away, but doesn't limit their media.
Yeah, I think that's a very very on point analysis. And I think just in terms of the mechanics of the app, you know, this is an app that you can use. It's a web app and an iOS app, and I'm pretty sure that they have an Android version available as well. Now, what it does, I just to be clear, you know, it allows you to save, basically, you can save articles, but also videos, or at least links to videos and audio and other stuff to actually watch later or read later. Because I think it does make sense. A lot of people's workflow around the web, maybe they're busy, maybe they're at work, or maybe they're just, you know, there's that kind of grazing mode that sometimes people are in on the web where you're looking at stories. Maybe you're going through Google Reader, or you're going to a website that has, or a blog that you read that has links. And then, so you're going to all these different sites, but maybe you don't stop and read the whole article there. What do? You bookmark it? You know, then when do you check your bookmarks? You know, do you use a bookmarking service? Do you use a social bookmarking service? So this is a way of putting stuff, to the side, but making it available to read. And then if you can have an iPad app or an iPhone app that can have the content available for you to consume when you want to, just consume content on your device. It's kind of there, and also it does have. I think the new version, the previous Read It Later app, had some pretty good settings, but it was sort of it tied the background color to the font, and I wanted a combination. I wanted basically just white background, but with the sans serif font that I seemed to want, and now I think it looks better. I think they changed the app. It looks better. But also, they now have a first-party Google Chrome plugin. They have a bookmarklet for Safari. But that's really key. So now, if you're going around, you can be in your Chrome web browser or, in Safari, and you can see articles. And then you can hit, the bookmarklet and have those articles saved for later. And then also, it plugs in to stuff like Reader app. I mentioned Reader app in episode 11. And actually, it's important that, like, it's Pocket is one of the services that you can, that connects into stuff like Google Currents, Flipboard, and Reader app.
Yeah, and it's really great for traveling, too, because you can download a bunch of articles, and I haven't tried it, videos and stuff, but on the plane, and be able to read them without having to connect to the internet if you don't have Wi-Fi on the plane.
I have a Mac app that I want to mention that fits right in to this subject, and that is Read Later. Now, these things a lot of them sound alike, but Read Later is a free Mac app that just plugs in to the Pocket service. So you can look, you can sit on your desktop and you can consume the content that you put aside with the Pocket service. And the desktop version of Reader that I mentioned previously, because there's different iOS versions too, and Reader is spelled with two E's. This app, the desktop version has like sort of a built-in readability client now, and that was maybe one of the advantages of readability. But now that this Read Later app is a nice app, and it works in a similar way, but just as a simple client for your Pocket content. So I recommend checking that out on the Mac App Store. That's free. If you start using the Pocket service, and they've made their iOS apps free. So, then you can also use that on your desktop, get a few bookmarklets. I think it's good in a lot of ways. If you're really busy, kind of going through stuff, during the day, maybe you want to read in the evening or however you pattern it, I think it can be useful.
Yeah. And it's nice to have your reading list with you, on any device, and just check it on it, and have that access to it.
Yeah. Now I have a song it's a clip that we're gonna have here at this break, and This is one of the songs from the forthcoming Niner 2 album, which we're still mixing. I think, you can already see the Saltwater single online at the website at blogs.sf3am.com/Niner. And you spell it N-E-E-N-E-R. And, check out our music. We have our first album out there, and then you can see Niner 2 out there. We'll be posting it online, coming up fairly soon. So here's a little fragment of one of the songs, then we're going to talk about PSP. Actually, it's the PS Vita now. All right, well, let's talk about that. Well, I had one more web app that I want to talk about that is just a thing called ZooTool. Now, I'm looking at all these services that are connecting into these other tools and services, and one of them, it seems like when you look at bookmarking services in some of these apps I've been talking about, that you see a lot of pinboard.in. which I haven't tried, and I think I might get an account there, but I haven't tried that yet. And then ZooTool, and that's a free one. And so this is a next generation social bookmarking service. People know Delicious.com is still around, or maybe they don't even know that. Now, I guess the YouTube founders and a few people bought Delicious from Yahoo, and it's still a service, but. I don't use that anymore, and so I tried using ZooTool. I've saved a handful of bookmarks with it, but it seems to fit into some of these apps, and it is free. So I'd recommend trying it if you're looking for some sort of social bookmarking service. It has bookmarklets for Safari or Chrome or whatever, and it actually does have a Chrome add-on too. So because for me, if I'm using add-ons, plugins, I'm expecting to have an add-on for Chrome. I'm happy to use a bookmarklet for Safari. But Chrome, I don't want to have that bookmark bar there the whole time I'm browsing. There's just something about the way Chrome is laid out that I think that would not be that wouldn't be very very good. Whereas Safari, I guess I have a lot more tolerance for having that little row of bookmarklets there. How is your feeling about add-ons? Do you think the golden age of add-ons is over since a lot of geeks have migrated away from Firefox to Chrome or Safari or other stuff?
I do. I mean, I never thought I would transfer over to Chrome.
But you're a daily Chrome user and you used to be daily Firefox user.
Yeah,
I mean, I'll use Safari and Chrome a lot, probably in a day, and then sometimes get on Firefox. I think that Chrome is probably my main browser though now, and I find that it performs well. That Safari is probably, in the same ballpark. Maybe I'm just a little more accustomed to Chrome because I've been using it longer. But now I like that you can sync bookmarks between it, but now I'm trying these, social bookmarking services, so maybe I don't have as much need for using one browser. I have my PS Vita right here, and this is a really cool system. I did mention it on a previous podcast briefly because I had tried Jim's, but now I have one, and it is really good for playing MLB 12 The Show. That's the only game I've played on it so far, but I think it's really solid, and I have hit a few home runs, but I haven't overall had very impressive offensive output. But I'm getting used to the pitching system, and I've even gotten a few hits. So I've enjoyed it, but I also have the PS3 version, and so they're pretty similar. It's actually pretty remarkable how similar they are, and I think overall, the PS Vita system, I really like. There's a couple quirks, you know, because it is a touchscreen, which is actually really cool. Occasionally, it expects you to use the touchscreen. Sometimes you're going through menus and you can't go up and down or hit enter, or at least not with X or whatever. You have to hit the screen to get somewhere. So that's kind of it's like it just really jumping into the touchscreen era. It's not just an add-on. It's very core to like doing almost anything with the system. Now, like, let's say you're in the web browser, which is, you know, it's fairly decent web browser. Certainly better than the PSP web browser, but, I mean, you know, it's really not bad. It's usable for a lot of sites. If you want to scroll down, you touch screen scroll the way that it works on, say, an iPhone. But at least by default, the left analog stick doesn't move you up and down on the browser. So I almost, like, maybe want it to be a little, you know, allow you a little bit to just control it like a game system. But you can't deny that, like, when, and features like selecting letters, you know, spelling stuff, or just, you know, extra bonus features in the game. Like, for example, you can select what type of pitch you want to throw either by hitting the button on the right that matches it, or hitting the indicator on the screen. And so I think it is really cool, and that takes it a level of enhancement beyond the PS3 in some, you know, edge areas of gameplay. Well, what are your impressions of the system so far as you've, you know, seen it much?
I like the feel of the controls. They're really nice. The buttons and the joysticks, you like the feeling of the PS3 controller. You know, it'll feel very familiar to you. I did not do very well when I first started playing MLB. I was pitching really bad, but I think I just have to get the hang of it. And I think I've heard that you can, like, play a game on the PSP and then transfer it over to the PS3 and back and forth. But so that's pretty cool that they're kind of realizing that doesn't matter, again, what medium the game is on. It's just when I want to play it and what do I have in front of me, you know. So that consistency over platforms is really great, and I commend them for doing that. And then adding in the touch screen and kind of following in Apple's footsteps of sort of best practices. How does it feel, you know, to hold and play?
I think it is a very solid feel. That's one of the really impressive things about it, is that it manages to have the right and left analog stick, and then the control pad on the left and the button pad on the right. And really, I think, you know, like you said, it for people that are used to the Sony PlayStation controllers, it's not that much of a stretch to use this system. It has some similarities to the PSP, where it has the right and left buttons. So there's basically R1 and L1, but not the equivalent of R2 and L2 like in the PS3 system. But that, you know, that makes sense. I mean, the ability to have the right analog stick, that's certainly going to be really huge for certain games. And I really think the hardware, yeah, is very impressive. I guess I really didn't really expect maybe quite as much from Sony at this point. And they really show that in certain areas, I think they can really make a compelling device, because I was wondering how if they were really going to make something compelling in the iPhone era. And you talk about Apple, I mean, I think this is a compelling gaming system because it's got a bigger screen than the iPhone. It has the touch screen and the buttons, you know, the controllers. It, you know, maybe is it inch for inch as, or pixel for pixel as good a screen as the iPhone 4S? I wouldn't say that, but I would say that it's very nice, and it's a good gaming screen, and then it has that combination of features that really make it like just an excellent device. I think, and like you said, being able to transfer stuff, it comes at a good point in the PS3's life cycle where hopefully it can really play at the level of a PS3. Whereas, you know, I remember thinking that the PSP was really sort of more like a place somewhere between a PS1 and a PS2 in terms of how powerful it was.
Yeah, and then you can also search the internet, right? How has that been?
Well, you know, I've been pretty happy with the browser, and it does have a Twitter client, which I think is pretty cool. And I'm hoping that there's some, like, there's already a handful of games in the store online, and then you can also get physical games. I'm hoping that, you know, it learns from Apple and makes plenty of casual games available, maybe anything from $1 to $5 or $10 that are, like, cool games that are maybe fun to play for a few hours, you know, like some of those iOS games are. And I'm not sure that, you know, we'll see how much Sony opens it up, how easy the development is for it, and stuff like that. But another thing I really appreciate has front and back cameras. They're very basic cameras. They're like kind of like traditional cell phone cameras. They're not like an iPhone, camera, current model, you know. But they are, it's just cool. I like, you know me, I love cameras, and I love, you know, our Nikon DSLR. But I also love, you know, average cameras and taking pictures with them. I love, you know, doing, you know, the whole range of photography. So I think it's cool to have, you know, a camera on a device like this. Even, you know, and then you think about it, there will be certain games that that people might, you know, use in the future that can have a use for the front-facing or rear-facing cameras.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so the MLB, the show 2012, I mean, yeah, you know, it's definitely been solid so far. So thank you for listening to the DJMCloud.com podcast with me, Daniel J. McKeown. This has been episode number 32, recorded April 27th, 2012. Thanks so much, Jessica, for joining. Now, if they want to check you out on Twitter, just follow you at Jessica McKeown, right?
Right.
And you can follow me at Pacific Pelican on Twitter, and you go to the website. You can see links to the music that we make, and you can see links to some of the stuff I've written and some of the photos I've taken. So check that out at djmcloud.com. And from Lakewood, Ohio, good night and happy Friday.